Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. On Saturday, a gang in Haiti kidnapped a group of 17 Christian missionaries, mostly Americans, who were visiting an orphanage. Five of the captured are children. Now, this particular gang was also responsible for the kidnappings of 10 Catholic clergy members back in April, and those clergy were released after about 2 weeks. The Haitian police force is weak, and while FBI agents have traveled to Haiti for support, they can only provide guidance but can't directly negotiate with the gangs. As of this morning, the gang was seeking $17 million in ransom, $1 million for each person they'd abducted. Haiti has the world's highest number of kidnappings per capita, and according to the United Nations Integrated Office, there have been 328 in the first 8 months of this year. Let's talk with Jacqueline Charles, Caribbean and Haiti correspondent for the Miami Herald. Jacqueline, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So first, tell me a bit about this gang.
So this gang, which is known as Katsa Mauzo or 400 Mauzo, they control a large part of the territory just east of Port-au-Prince, along a very well-traveled road that connects the Haitian capital to the Dominican Republic border. It is an area that is rural, so there are large plains. So even if police know where they're holding the Americans and the one Canadian, the reality is that they won't be able to access it. Every time police have tried to go in there, the gang is aware. Police have not been able to make arrest of some of its more active leaders, although one of its leaders is currently in the prison. But I'm told by sources that he remains active on the scene. So this is a gang that's well known because, you know, what they do in terms of kidnappings, they're not just kidnapping an individual person here or there, but they're kidnapping people by the busloads, the carloads, the vanloads. And this is what we saw in this incident, in this case with the 17 missionaries.
Now, I presume that the kidnappings are primarily to raise revenue. Is that a fair assumption?
It's a fair assumption that they're motivated by money and not political ideology. But the question is, where does that money go? You know, Haiti is a country that is under a U.S. arms embargo. So theoretically, right, there shouldn't be arms. There shouldn't be heavy ammunition. But this is, of course, a serious problem because these gangs are better armed than the Haitian National Police.
Okay. Now, the group that was abducted in April, priests and nuns primarily, was there a ransom paid for their release?
You know, officially they've said that there was no ransom paid, but I've heard through, you know, sources who monitor gang activity that there was a ransom that was paid. They were held for almost 2 weeks. And in that group, they also included French nationals. But in this case, as you're going to see in the United States, or in the case of the U.S., no, the negotiations with the gang is not necessarily with the institutions the individuals represent, but with their family members. Because the institutions have been very careful, especially the Catholic Church in Haiti, not to be involved in this whole idea of paying ransom because it creates a vicious cycle.
Help us again to understand when we say gangs and Haitian gangs, what we're talking about here and the role that they play, particularly in this kind of, you know, moment of political crisis and post-earthquake. Who are they?
You're talking about mainly young men in their 20s, some even younger, who come from very poor neighborhoods, slums. They don't really have any prospect of the future. So they made themselves available to the patronages of the business elite who are trying to secure their monopolies or trying to get one up on competition. They made themselves available to politicians who want to win re-election, run for office, or remain in power. But we're also talking about former police officers, and in some cases, active cops, you know, bad cops who have now joined these gangs or are part of them. One of the country's most notorious and well-known leaders is a guy by the name of Jimmy Cherizier, who goes by the moniker Barbecue. He's a former cop who's been implicated in several massacres, including one in a poor neighborhood in Port-au-Prince, where you have scores of people who were killed, including babies. Though he is wanted by the Haitian National Police, though he has been sanctioned by the U.S. government. He continues to walk freely. And in fact, on Sunday, when armed men prevented the country's acting prime minister from paying homage to the memory of assassinated founding father Jean-Jacques Dessalines at a monument, hours later, Barbecue appeared dressed in white like a government official, and he laid his wreath of flowers. This is what you're talking about.
Okay. What does that tell you then about the likely condition that the missionaries are in? Do we think that they're relatively safe? Do you expect this to be completed in a way that ultimately doesn't lead to immediate violence against the missionaries?
Let me tell you, this is a very nerve-wracking and frightening process. For those of us who cover Haiti on a consistent basis, we actually shy away from writing about people when they are being held in captivity because we just don't know. Every case is different. I mean, in the case of the Catholic clergy from earlier this year, when they were finally freed, they said that they were not mistreated despite the reports that were coming out at the time. You had among them some of them who did speak Creole, but there are cases where I've interviewed victims of kidnapping, and it's horrible, some of the things that have happened with them. One can only hope that in this case, because we're talking about foreign nationals, that the gang will use some sense of reasonableness. You know, the question that Haitians are asking themselves is that when they stopped that vehicle at gunpoint, and they saw that these were foreigners, why didn't they just walk away? Why did they not let it go? How did they become so emboldened? Because the reality is that hundreds and hundreds of Haitians have been victims of kidnapping, even more than what the United Nations has said, because it's an underreported crime in many instances. And so far this year, the tally that we have for foreigners, including this group, is about 42. But, you know, normally when you're talking about foreigners, gangs don't want that kind of scrutiny. They don't want to deal with the embassies or the, you know, the capitals of Washington and Paris. But we're seeing with this particular gang, Katsa Maozo, that they have become increasingly emboldened in terms of who they take hostages, how they take and how many they take. Unlike other gangs in the capital that are very much heavily involving kidnappings as well, this particular gang, you know, in order to avoid scrutiny, what they will do is that they will kidnap by the carload or the busload. But in one day, they can grab 6-7 vehicles. Mm-hmm. So instead of making $200,000 a pop by ransoming someone, they can make that amount of money in a day by ransoming several vehicles that they've grabbed.
Jacqueline, so given what we've seen at the U.S. southern border with the treatment of Haitian migrants, many of whom have been migrating across South and Central America since the earthquake years ago at this point, the situation you just described to me sounds like the kind of moment when we end up with massive refugee situations coming out of nations. Is there a reason to think that that may happen in Haiti, that we'll see a flood of people seeking protection and shelter from this violence?
It is happening. They're not arriving at the Florida Straits as we are used to seeing because of the Coast Guard, but they're arriving in the Bahamas. They're arriving in the Turks and Caicos. I mean, what we've been reporting in the last couple of weeks is that the Haitian migration crisis isn't just a U.S.-Mexico border crisis. It's a Latin America and Caribbean crisis. We're seeing Haitians all the way in Guyana. And what particularly is happening in the case of the earthquake is that those individuals desperate to get out, desperate for some kind of help, they're now being targeted by traffickers who are basically having them pay hundreds, thousands of dollars in some cases, get on a boat, only to turn around days later and to end up back in Haiti because they get caught or they break down on a reef in the Bahamian waters. We've even had Haitians end up in Cuba. So we are starting to see this crisis. Everybody's been focused on Del Rio, but the reality is while those individuals in Del Rio don't want to go back to a country that they no longer recognize and they left maybe 10, 11 years ago, there are people today who are leaving, trying to either get to the United States or get somewhere else in this region.
Do you have a clear sense of the ways that the international community could effectively intervene to address this level of gang violence? And at this point, even the vulnerability of foreign nationals traveling on mission in a Catholic country.
Well, you know, what's interesting, Haiti is under travel for wanting from the United States, right? But that doesn't really make a difference, because when you talk to people, missionaries, you know, they're committed to the work that they're doing. They understand that they are, you know, providing a service in a country where people are poor, where the government doesn't exist and there are no services. But today, that is the question in terms of the international community that has sort of been dancing around this issue of Haiti, saying, oh, there's Haiti fatigue. But the reality is, if the U.S. government and others in the international community are not proactive and figure out what their response is going to be to assist Haiti to deal with this violence, to deal with this surge in gang violence, then it's going to reach a moment, unfortunately, where they're going to run out of options. And, you know, today there are several debates or several options that have been thrown out. All of them are problematic. You know, a return of UN peacekeepers, U.S. military involvement, special forces or private contractors. But, you know, nobody wants to pull the plug and make a decision. And when you talk to Haitians, what they tell you is time is running out.
Jacqueline Charles is Caribbean and Haiti correspondent for the Miami Herald. As always, Jacqueline, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.